Red Business with Jonathan Healy.
Hi there, and thanks very much for joining us on this episode of Red Business. We're going to talk about the business of pet stores, and we're going to speak to the chairman of the CIF Cork region about the challenges facing the city as it tries to expand and grow. But first of all, we're going to talk about sport. It was my pleasure to be at a recent Cork City game as the match sponsor, in fact, for the game against Bray Wanderers, which got me thinking about the business of soccer and how indeed it is a business and a difficult one at that. Anthony O'Sullivan is the commercial manager for Cork City FC. He's with us now. How are you doing, Anthony?
Very good, Jonathan. Thanks for having me.
Lovely to talk to you. And I have to say, it was a great night we had there. People who haven't gone to a Cork City game, they don't know what they're missing out on.
Absolutely, yeah. It's match night, and the experience of the atmosphere in the ground can be quite good. So thank you for your support last week. And I think you can see what a business can achieve for their brand by partnering in such a way on a match day partner or something similar. So thank you again for your support.
No, happy to do it. I mean, the club is actually, 40 years old this year. Started back in 1984. And it's been a heck of a roller coaster, hasn't it? Not just on the pitch, but off it as well.
Absolutely. There's been some ups and downs and challenges and change of owners and managers and so on and so forth. But look, I mean, the club are in a good place at the moment. So it's just about pushing that forward and driving it on as best we can.
Tell us a little bit about the business, though, because, I mean, everybody focuses on the team. Now, I know, obviously, demotion to the First Division last year wasn't where you wanted to end up. You're top of the table, though, in the First Division right now. So hopefully it will be a temporary blip. But there's an awful lot has to go on off the pitch, if I could put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, there has been a lot of change and transition over the last kind of 12 to 18 months with Dermot Usher, the new owner, coming in and taking over the helm. And myself, I only joined the role in the middle of last year, so it was midway through a turbulent season, so it was a little bit difficult and challenging all round. Look, we are where we are, to use that unfortunate analogy, but I think it's allowed us all to kind of reevaluate and look at what the priorities are in terms of getting out of where we are as quickly as we can, and not just getting out of it, but staying out of it and keeping ourselves in top flight football, and, you know, looking forward to the days of Champions League and FAI Cup titles and so on and so forth over the coming season. So that's internally in the club where we're all pushing to get to, and it's how we go about achieving that. It's very much around commercial revenue and business support and the wider Cork community getting behind the club in terms of the series of events and match nights and game attendance and so on.
Tell us a little bit about the rest of the club, because I know we all focus on the men's senior team, but there's also the ladies team and there's the academy as well. And all of those different elements have to be funded. They don't just happen by accident.
Very much so, Jonathan. Yeah. And if you look at the success of the academy that's filtering through to the men's First Division team at the moment, I mean, we have Cathal O'Sullivan who's ripping Turner's Cross apart on match nights and away nights over the last while. Obviously, Cathal has come through the academy. We have Jaden Uma, we have Matthew Murray. So the academy is doing what it's supposed to be doing. But again, it's about developing that on and, you know, rowing behind Liam Kearney and the other coaches in the academy and just pushing that on as best we can. So again, it's down to business support and sponsorships that are going to help us to grow, develop and, you know, keep that stream of constant players coming through the academy, which is what everybody in Cork wants to see, is Cork boys and Cork girls pulling on that Cork City jersey and going out and representing Cork City Football Club and really having the belief and the passion behind the jersey and the badge that they're playing for. So,
And how responsive are businesses, Anthony, to that call? Because there's sponsorship, there's jersey sponsorship. I think Zeus Packaging are your main sponsor at the moment on the front of the jersey, but there's lots of other sponsorships as well. So is the business community getting behind the club?
They are. Look, there's always room for more. But I suppose since I took over the role the middle of last year, what I'm finding is if I'm approaching companies, they sometimes feel that they're their budget or the allocation of monies that they could potentially put towards the academy might to them seem too low or too small of an ask to get involved with the academy. But really, that's not the case. It's a case of tailor-making a package to suit a business. So different companies, different sizes will have different narratives and messages that they want to communicate or ways in which they can align with the club. So it's never a case that any amount of money or any offering or donation is too small. The club will always find and have a use for it, be it bottles of water or, match day buses or pre-food or, there's always something. And everybody's contribution put in together increases the pot and just allows the club and the academy to develop on in terms of the offering to players and so on match days and in the overall structure of the academy itself. So if there is a business out there that would like to discuss an opportunity with the club, irrespective of how small they feel their budget would be, that budget can be assigned to something that would be put to very good use within the academy on the women's side specifically, or on the boys and girls academies or the Corky camps or whatever it might be. So there's room there for everybody to get involved in some shape, make, way, or form.
And there's golf days as well. You guys have a couple of golf days every year in Kildare and in Cork. What do you hope to achieve through those? Is it just to have a game of golf, or is it more about forming connections and building those bridges?
Yeah, it's very much about both, Jonathan. I suppose the corporate golf days, one in the K Club on the 22nd of July, one in Cork Golf Club on the 1st of July. So those will be really about encouraging big business and corporate within, people that would be originally from Cork that might now have business interests in Dublin, Kildare, Leinster, that would like to support the club. You can take the man out of Cork, but you'll never take Cork out of the man. So it's just a nice way of a company to get behind the club and support. They're very much going to be corporate focused golf days for the K Club and Cork Golf Club. So again, it's about use Cork City's golf event to one, support the club, but two, to give something back to your own staff or customers or suppliers or guests that you would like to invite along. I mean, who doesn't want to play a round of golf in the K Club or Cork Golf Club? They're two of the more prestigious clubs or courses in the country. So again, look, it is a little bit of a fun day out and team bonding exercise as much as encouraging big business to get behind the club by supporting. We obviously have the members kind of traditional golf day in Lee Valley coming up on the 19th of September. So that's again a good opportunity for the rank and file supporter to meet the likes of Tim Clancy and Dermot Usher, people that they may not have everyday access to come along and shake their hands and get a picture taken and so on and
And
so forth. So,
more importantly, beat them at golf, which is
well,
is one of the
yeah.
purposes of going out there. Cork City FC, of course, is the website. You can find out all the details there on the various different fundraising initiatives, and they can contact you via the website as well. Anthony, long may you stay top of the table and heading back towards the Premier League. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us on Red Business.
Grace, thank you for having me, Jonathan. Thanks for your time.
One of the things that happened during lockdown is everyone seemed to get a pet of some kind. Dog, cat, guinea pig, you name it, everybody has one these days, which means there's a lot more availability of pet stores. But there is one particular store that is leading the way. Its headquarters in Ireland is in Cork. It's Maxi Zoo, and they recently opened their 30th store here. Head of marketing is Anthony Cremin. Anthony, how are you?
I'm good, Jonathan. Thanks very much for having me on board.
I mean, Maxi Zoo is a real runaway train, a success story, isn't it? I mean, the 30th store, I think, was opened in Turner's Cross, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, if we look about where we started our business 18 years ago, back in 2006, we opened our first store actually in Ballingalloch in Cork. And since that stage, I suppose the rapid growth and expansion for the pet market has, it's crazy in one sense how much demand there is there. And I think it probably became a bit more relevant and prevalent during the COVID period, how much people rely and turn to pets in the, I suppose, in an area of need. So yeah, I mean, look, from our point of view, we opened Turner's Cross there just before Christmas. We had a nice, lovely family fun weekend. Towards the end of January, we were able to do some activities for people in Cork, and have some activity in store. And it's worked really well. But look, we're not stopping our stall there. Our plan is to continue to grow and expand the business.
And there are other stores that are opening around the country as well. What is it about Maxi-Zou, though, that has resonated, that has gotten people in? Because, you can't open all these stores if people aren't buying.
Yeah. I think from our point of view, I mean, we see us, we definitely operate within that specialist field. So, I mean, listen, I suppose traditionally people have gone to the grocery channel typically when you're doing your weekly shop where you'll pick up your pet food and so on. And that's all fine. But from our point of view, I suppose we like to see ourselves nearly as that next form of guidance advice. If you're looking for some recommendations on the best food to feed for your pet, even if it's a thing, anything around dietary requirements, you know, a lot of dogs and animals these days particularly have sensitive stomachs, sensitive digestive systems, sensitivities to, you know, that cause itchy and scratchiness of the front paws. And I suppose by coming into store and having a chat with us, we're nearly that point of contact before you have to go to a vet. So you can get some free advice from us, and we can advise you on the best products for your pet. And I mean, look, we cater to all different types of categories. We've dog, we've cat, we've small animal, we've acre, we have bird. So we really pride ourselves, I suppose, on our expertise, and we go through a rigorous training program with all our staff, making sure that they're, you know, really up to speed in all the advice and requirements that they can give to our customers.
Of course, people are very keen to do the right thing these days as well. I'm not knocking the dog food of the past and the cat food of the past, but they do care about what their animals are eating in the same way they care about what they're eating themselves. So, there are different options and different choices for them, and everybody wants to make sure their pet is healthy.
Yeah, exactly. And look, you know, if I think about going back 20, 30 years ago with my parents, and we had dogs. I mean, traditionally back then, what would have been talked about is feeding your dog wet food.
Oh, nonstop. Yeah, everything came out of a can, didn't
Yeah, exactly. Or look, feeding scraps off the table would have been a very popular, you know, way to feed your pets in the past. So I suppose what's happened, you know, particularly over the last, you know, 10 to 15 years, it's just been a lot more education. And I suppose that's where we see we have an important role here locally in the Irish market about educating the customer and consumer on that. So, I mean, feeding wet food to your dog or to your cat is not bad, but it's all about balance. It's all about, you know, mixed feeding with dry nuts, and both of them will have, you know, benefits that can help the development of your dog. Another big thing that I suppose, you know, people aren't aware of is that, you know, you have a puppy, and then they go into adult cycle, and then they go into senior cycle. You know, we do surveys every year, you know, twice typically, you know, first from January to the middle of the year, and then from middle of the year to the end of December, with about 1,000 Irish consumers. And about one third of Irish consumers have senior pets that would typically fall over that kind of, you know, age group of 7 to 8 or 9 years of age, but they're not feeding their pets senior food because they're not aware they need to transition. So there's still a lot more education needed in the market. And, you know, we want to try and narrow that gap from our point of view.
The other thing you're doing is linking up with a lot of animal charities and in the 30 different locations, I suppose. There's always good causes out there, but how do you pick the charities you work with?
Yeah, I mean, we very much try to leave it up to the local store network themselves. So, I mean, we can reach out to the charities, or in a lot of cases, we'll actually have the charities reach out to us and see if we can support them, which we're always happy to do. I suppose from our point of view, we just need to make sure they're a registered charity network. And once they've gone through that registered process, we're happy to work with the shelters. We currently work with probably 60, 65 across the country, which is quite significant and quite a lot. And so we try to cater to him as much as possible. And we run different initiatives then throughout the year to try and be able to support them, be it monetary donation campaigns or even at Christmas. You know, an example would be we have an annual Shelter Wishes campaign. So we donate stock to the charities, but we also encourage customers when they're coming in store to pick up it's called a wish card from a wishing tree at Christmas. And it's the whole idea and concept behind it is that we don't want any animal in a shelter at Christmas to be forgotten about. So the whole idea is that you buy something in store from the 1st until the 24th of December, And then the charity come in store, collect the items, and present it to the gift, the gift to the animal on Christmas Day, which is a really nice initiative. And I must say, it's something we've been doing for a number of years now, and it's just getting bigger and bigger. We granted just under 4,000 wishes for animals in December 2023, so it's really rewarding to be able to help charities and help animals who are particularly badly in need at the moment. You know, unfortunately, we did see a massive influx of animal ownership during COVID. But what we are now starting to see is the knock-on effects of people going back into the work environment, not working from home probably as much as they used to do. And we see it every day of the week, shelters and charities are inundated with dogs being abandoned, and not even dogs, small animals, but look, we're predominantly a dog nation. But it's really... it's really disheartening to see for the poor animals that are in that situation.
Absolutely, it is, and it's great. 4,000 dogs got a nice little treat at Christmas, thanks to you guys. So you have the new store in Turner's Cross. I think you're Ballincollig, where the first store opened. You're in Blackpool as well. You're in Mahon Point. Anywhere else in Cork that I'm missing?
Yeah, we're in Middleton. Yeah, so outside of Dublin, where Cork is the largest county, where we have the store located. We have 5 in Cork. And listen, we can't rule out down the line that we won't open more in Cork. I mean, from our point of view, we're constantly looking to grow. We're constantly looking to expand. You know, in addition to that, with 30 stores at the moment, we'll be opening 4 more this year. We're opening in Portlaoise and Killarney in the next coming weeks, and 2 more towards the end of the summer. So yeah, constantly looking to grow the business. And then in addition to that, we have our online web shop as well. So yeah, growing business at the moment, always looking to help the local community and tie back to supporting Irish jobs, Irish suppliers, Irish charities.
All right, Anthony, it's a fantastic success story so far from small beginnings in Ballincollig. Anthony Cremin, Head of Marketing with Maxi Zoo. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Jonathan, thank you very much.
Cork is changing. We know that. R&H Hall, the wonderful old warehouses that had, let's face it, seen better days, being chomped to pieces ahead of the rejuvenation of the Docklands in the years ahead. But what do we need to make sure it does indeed happen, and there's plenty of places for people to live in the much expanded Cork? Simon O'Keefe is the man who's just after taking over for the CIF in the Cork region as their chairman. He's with me now. Simon, how are you?
Hi there, Jonathan. I'm very well, thanks. Glad to be with you.
Lovely to talk to you. You have taken on this role at a very interesting time. How did you get involved with the CIF?
Well, I work for an off-site construction company out in Ballincollig. It's called Postform Systems. And we make washrooms. It's paneling products. But the difference is that we make them off-site and then bring them to site and install them. So they're made in a factory environment. It's the crossover between manufacturing and construction that's emerging more and more with this development of off-site construction.
So that's obviously as good a way to get in as any, because you're at the cutting edge of modern technology. But when you look at the challenges that are out there now, it's actually just building houses for people to live in that we are still struggling with in 2024. How do you think we can just do better?
Look, there's a lot of noise out there. So maybe I should get across a couple of facts about housing construction in Ireland. In 2023... there were just short of 33,000 residential units built, and that's 10% up in the previous year and I think 60% up in the year before that. And the same goes with apartments. They're up 28%. There's been nearly 1,500 new student bed spaces built. So that's taking the pressure off other, releasing pressure in the market. So, I mean, there is definite progress in the market. Now, we also have good reason to believe that there's some acceleration in the housing delivery pipeline. I was just looking there in the last quarter of 2023, dwelling completions are up 13%. But, and this is important, dwelling commencements were up 47% and planning permissions were up 43%. And even the younger figures, the more recent figures, commencements in January 24 were 60% higher than in January 23. So there, what I'm trying to get across here is that there is a lot of work being done. There's a lot of good work being done and success being delivered by the industry when it comes to housing.
But the problem is we don't have enough houses, and it's consistently dragging us down. I know numbers are increasing, but how do we get to the point where we are seeing things like the Docklands being developed, Simon?
Well, I think, you know, more of the same is much of the answer. There have been important actions by government, that the water rebate scheme waiver on the development contribution charges on the commencements, Croí Cónaithe project and Tosaigh when it comes to apartments. The fact is that the construction industry, I should probably say, can't do the job on its own. It needs the, you know, participation of all the other stakeholders. So it's a very wide church that must come together to work to develop the city in the way we all want, and the region, the wider region. I mean, when it comes to challenges, infrastructure is an obvious one. You know, there are fundamental enabling works that has to be done. Planning is probably one of the most significant constraints. I mean, the length of time between the inception to execution of a project is years, and obviously, you know, within that sort of period, you know, costs change, and so, you know, we need to streamline the assessment and the adjudication processes within the planning process to accelerate the delivery of both infrastructure and housing.
The other challenge, of course, is finding the people to deliver these projects. That's turning into the new headache for the industry. Are we after losing a generation to other countries, or have apprenticeships into the trades not been attractive enough?
Well, you know, Jonathan, I think that an awful lot of people are like me. They've embarked on what you might call a boomerang career. I think, you know, having grown up in Ireland, most people would agree it's a fantastic place to bring up kids and to live. So like me, people are going away and then coming back as their kids, you know, reach that sort of, you know, there's those 6-year gaps when they start school and then starting secondary school. So, plenty of people have gone abroad, but I think that's all to the good, because in general, they're bringing back new skills and new ideas and new ways of working that are feeding into the business. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say that it isn't a challenge, especially given that, you know, we've almost full employment now. But what you might not know is that the employment in the sector was 24%. That's a full quarter over the level in January 29, this January. So there is significant growth there. But it's a big sector, and it's got a big appetite for labour and specialist skills. And like, I mean, there's 170,000 people employed in the construction sector nationally, and about 17,000 here in the Cork area. But there's a few things that are probably worth mentioning. The CIF Careers in Construction campaign has been very effective. That's promoting the diverse types of roles available in the sector, and also addressing issues like gender and international qualifications and people with additional needs. And the Cork CETB is working hard to create a pipeline of talent for the future. Mm. Government has been continually active with recruitment drives, I think most recently in South Africa, and accelerating visa and work permits for those that have the sort of critical skills that we need in the industry and who want to come and work here.
Finally, Simon, you sound incredibly upbeat and optimistic. I mean, we hear doom and gloom around construction the whole time. Are you a bit of an outlier?
No. I mean, I think, yeah, certainly, you know, some people take different views on things. But here's my point. There's no point in sort of moaning in the abstract. Oh, you know, the housing crisis. What we need to do is break that down and say, okay, what specifically needs to be done, and let's address these matters. And those are the ones I've been describing to you. Things like the planning processes, things like government support for activity on the ground. All of that has to work together.
Simon, we wish you the best of luck in your tenure as the president of the Cork branch of the Construction Industry Federation. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today on Red Business.
Absolutely delighted. Thank you very much, Jonathan.
And that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, Red Business in Focus, with thanks to Cork's local enterprise offices, is up and running right now. You'll find it on all of Red FM's social media channels and on the website redfm.ie. We'll catch you on the next one.